start out with the minutes as well.
Mr. Chair, I move that the minutes be approved as read.
Second. Motion and a second. Objections? Motion passed. Minutes approved. So we're under agenda. Minutes approved. So the
public comment.
I'm thinking the public just left us.
Nice, sir.
We have one public here.
Oh, two.
Yeah, two. Three.
That was a non-agenda item.
Not at this point.
I've got one. Travis Bridgman, live in North Bend, 713 Ogle Avenue. And this is just kind of a fun idea, actually. Potentially, it's kind of like a voter's pamphlet type of a structure, but it's a get to know our commissioners. So if we had like a little book with your picture and kind of your bio, some resume information, what you believe in, why you're here, kind of where you're going in the future. It'd just be kind of a fun, and obviously you get to choose what information you have, but then the other commissioners get to know you, the public has the ability to get to know you, and I think it'd be a great idea for city staff to do it, council members, everyone that's involved with our foundational infrastructure to have, maybe even some like involved citizens could get a page in there. And it's just a fun idea for a group, the leading group of all of our planning, to maybe put together a book and just say, hey, this is who I am, why I'm here, and I'm willing and proud enough and concrete enough in facts to write it down and say this is who we are. Thanks. You're welcome.
Anyone else in the public? Next speaker of non-agenda item. Seeing none, move on to item four.
Okay, and just for the record, I basically briefed the Planning Commission on what had happened last meeting, and we're going to go through now and update the planning commissioners that were not at that meeting on what was discussed during that meeting. And Mr. Ryan
was speaking. I was going to add to my comments from last week about fact, I believe that what strikes me most about the area that is specifically zoned south of the freeway, while that zoning may be in place and it was thought through quite ably by the previous planning commissions, as a former forester, I understand how fires get started and I understand how fires are stopped. And what worries me a lot is about putting in more density up against that Rattlesnake Ridge. And the idea, those two areas there are indicators to me. There may be other opportunities along that south side where higher density will be proposed. And I think it's time to make a stand about not encouraging high density. I'm talking any greater than one per acre in that area. That mountain's had fire history in the past. And, you know, when we look at it, it looks like it's virgin, but it's not. It's been burnt twice. We used to get a logging mill right there by the lake up there.
Rattlesnake.
Not Rattlesnake. No, that little pond.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There was a mill there, and that caught fire. It went right to the top. It couldn't even stop it. So I'm encouraging for future planning to not encourage high densities, no matter what. We might have an interest in annexing further on, but I would not encourage high densities. It's time to just be thinking about that. We thought about it with Mount Side. We've reduced the densities up there. I think the same holds true with this part of the south freeway. I also think that the I-90 corridor provides a visual corridor. We still have that rural feeling looking south on I-90, either going east or west. And you have more anticipation of a different kind of a skyline to the north of I-90. I think that probably helps me also keep in mind that we're keeping our rural roots by keeping an area, a large area south of the freeway, look rural. So that's what's behind my attack on that particular piece of land. It's representative of how I feel about the entire landscape south of the freeway.
Great. So, he's already kind of summarized his one thing we did that I thought was really helpful is everybody kind of proposed not just what a concern was, but a proposed solution. So obviously he summarized it that one view per acre and just limit intensity to density in that area. So the next one will go to Jim Lucky. Jim, do you want me to summarize it? Or do you?
Well, I think you got it. I mean, the idea is we're going to bring density to the city and activity to the city, then the area around the city core needs to be set up to make that happen. Or to not even make it happen, to allow it. Right now, it's defined by the historical overlays and roads that don't go to the right connected dots and people walk into a certain density area. So my thought was, let's figure out a way to bring in more of the city's land to the function of the density of the city. That's about it.
So you're basically saying, let's figure out a way to densify the downtown area.
Well, allow the zoning to create that option.
Okay.
Anyone who's got that density zoning doesn't necessarily have to make that density. I'm much more for not letting people choose density to their property, but we're restricting what a natural growth would be, and that's where we can fix that.
And Jim, I agree with your vision there. When I think about this corridor area in here, believe it or not, I think about Edmonds. We have enough mix of older properties and newer properties and street mixtures where we can actually do something. We have an urban canopy growing in town. If we allow that to continue to mature, I think blocking up the growth like you're talking about it could give us a downtown feel.
Yeah. You call it the whole. Strip's terrible. In fact, I just came back from Florida. The highest elevation in Florida is about 32 feet. Yes, well, it's something. That's good to help reach the seagulls. Anyway, if you travel around, and everybody does, you see how cities have done planning and cities have done no planning.
Yeah.
And once you've done no planning, we have a 99 in Seattle that says the same thing. Path the progress is wherever the road is made, it really goes right off, like it really dumps off the road. So that was part of my thought. So hopefully we'll continue the discussion.
Okay. Gary, I'll speak for Gary. He basically had a concern or a desire to see a connected road between Maloney Grove and 432nd. That would happen as growth happens. That's part of what is required. So that was one concern he had. But as part of that connected road, he did make a comment that he felt that there was a need for neighborhood commercial uses, like a place to go buy your milk or a dry cleaner. So really a commercial use that serves the immediate population of that neighborhood. So he felt that that area was something that could utilize that. He also, I know this one off the top of my head, he also out on 140th felt that this the zoning that is currently employment park, so more of your industrial two zones, your employment park one and two, he felt like those should be rezoned, that area facing 140th should be rezoned to reflect more of the residential character. Within this neighborhood commercial area, there's actually a really nice little residential neighborhood. We got some single family homes there and sprinkled in throughout here. So his proposal or his input was, hey, let's look at the zoning in that area on 140th and ask maybe should it be more residential. And then over here on East North End Way, he felt that this kind of whole area that's zoned cottage might be a great place to have a little more dense condominium townhome style development. He even said he'd be okay seeing 3 to 4 stories with the ground floor being more of a mix of services. So that was one comment he had.
I'd like to add on to his neighborhood, a four-corner feeling about neighborhood commercial. I think that geographically it almost begs for it, because this is isolated. We don't have to get down to this highway to do anything. If we could stay locally to buy our milk, buy pickup items, have a barbershop, whatever, we'd have a four-corner type commercial there, you know, like I'm saying in here. It keeps people from coming on the highway and then going into one area. It keeps the neighborhood intact. And I know I sound like a cornball when I talk like this, but I tell you, the more I go into Seattle, which I don't do much, I notice these things. I notice that neighborhoods like Wallingford and other ones have a core neighborhood. They don't go into downtown Seattle to get their stuff. They stay in their spot. And because of that, they see each other more frequently, and they have a more collective feeling. We could develop that in this community by having such four, I would call it four-corner commercial, where we would not encourage franchises, but just independent operators who are known locally, who live locally, and work locally.
Because I like that idea. We talked about that a while ago. It seems like a nice, homey, rural feeling. And as I was looking at the map, I noticed that there were already a couple of neighborhood commercial areas that haven't been developed. You know, one in particular is right in the corner of Bellside Road in East Park, Benway.
Yeah.
The other one is here, right there. I mean, perfect spot. You know, this is really a gas station, right? I mean, common sense would kind of point you towards that. You got Rattlesnake Lake up here, which draws a ton of attention. And then, you know, Mount Si Road, right there with Mount Si, is a known, very popular spot. And so I guess I was wondering, you know, as we delve into possibly, like, into too romantic thinking, why haven't these developed? You know, is there not a draw? You know, moving from the East Coast, I noticed people are very attached to their cars, and they don't mind traveling far, which is kind of disappointing, because it would be nice for the person who lived right there to be able to walk, you know, a half a block to the business that they started. Granted, I'm not going to be that person, so I don't know how I can expect somebody else to take that risk. But at the same time, I'd like the thought.
I think it has maybe it has to do with the street itself. It's fast, it's not neighborly. I'm talking about, rather than leaving your neighborhood down to a traffic arterial, it emerges right in the neighborhood.
I think also that what one of the essential missing ingredients is that Seattle has is the density. So each one of those little stores needs a certain mass of people to serve as its customer base. And we're pretty spread out in North Bend here, and I think we've heard a lot of comments that maybe we're even too dense, more dense than what a lot of the people would like. So without that density, I don't think it may not be viable for those little stores.
That's a piece of information that's helpful to have in the discussion, like, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of, expand on the point, it doesn't mean we should eliminate it from, you know, consideration, right? I mean, to allow that possibility, it would be interesting, maybe at the risk of getting blacklisted forever. There's that, well, I'm going to bring up some point for this. Okay. You know, there's that little place down where the cloud right across from the fire station. And it'd be interesting to see, like, what the turnover is in that, and why, or, you know, I mean, now that there's more building, more homes being built up around it, what effect is that having, and, you know, what is happening to those businesses? Because that's a perfect example of, I think, what we're kind of trying to see, you know, what's going on over there. Because, you know,
Ben Cat. So I think that's a big thing to kind of define is, are we talking more of a combination of uses, or are we talking just a one-off case? Somebody, like one thing I keep wondering is, how are all these wine tasting little rooms popping up all over residential areas where you can stop and those are happening? I mean, that could be, you know, something that...
And it may not happen through zoning. Maybe it's just an allowance that... if somebody wants to do a corner market that has very strict limitations on size, on impact, maybe it's allowed within single-family residential zones in certain areas, on certain streets.
I've lost three barbers or hairmasters to their own barbershop in their garage. Down at River Bend, you got three almost in the same street. They're finding, people are finding them, they're being successful in their haircutting business. And I think that it's that kind of entrepreneurialism that we're talking about, where we offer like a tight zoning area for people who want to really just walk in their business, open up a shop.
Well, what you're talking about is actually our home occupation permit. So you can have a home occupation like that. And the, where it's interesting, though, is we actually restrict, the city restricts, the sales of goods. So you can have a service, like somebody comes to get their hair done, or a tax attorney, or but you could not come in and say, hey, I want to have a little shop where I sell milk and coffee.
And beer and cigarettes.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was avoiding that.
Because that's inappropriate for areas
for residential. Zoning can always be there, but it may not be taken advantage of. You know, it does. I don't know what the problem, what the planning process is to have a zone in place where nobody uses it. You know, if you have a secondary zone on top of that that can be used until somebody wants to do something with the underlying zone, or you have to. If you have a zone, you have to use that zone for the purposes zoned for.
Yeah.
It wasn't because their problem, or it might be too late to come in with a four corner operation because the area gets.
Well, the more that it gets built out, the more potential customers are to support something like that.
Yeah, but then you have to have the zone there to be able to mm-hmm. to utilize that population. But once the zone isn't there, like we have in our acres tonight, when the zone is not being used for what's intended to be used, you forget it's actually zoned that way, like the industrial rock pit. You just forget what the zone is that's not being used for anything. All of a sudden, it comes to life, and you've got a four-corner shopping center going on. You didn't know it was there. You didn't know it was supposed to be there in the first place, and so everyone rejects it. So I don't know what comes first here, the goose or the gander.
Well, I think the important thing about when you're zoning your city is you ask yourself, am I okay with the out of the loud uses you have in that particular area or zone? Am I okay with basically the look and feel and every single if any of those uses got so, for example, I mean, if you did want to zone these little markets within neighborhoods, and you did that, and then one popped up, you would probably have neighbors concerned that there's going to be beers and space sold next door. So, there's always that cause and effect to think about, and that's, I think, the important part. So, you want to create zones that are actually very flexible. But in that flexibility, you also got to ask yourself, okay, if this happened, what are the impacts to the neighboring? Does it fit it? Are we okay with that? If the answer is yes, then...
That may be why you see in some communities these little stores and shops across from schools. Because you got a high density of children there. They're being picked up by their parents and whatnot. They stop off and get some groceries and get the kids to go home. So maybe wherever you see a school, you might think about some sort of a very restricted commercial zone.
Or what I've seen in several locations is the kids congregate in those establishments to get their sodas and their snacks before they walk home. Or, you know, so that the kids themselves are their primary customers.
Yeah.
I never did that.
Just a thought, and this little corner right here, right out here behind Drugtown, across from Keeney. Looks to be perfect for what you're talking about. The milk barn kind of thing, along with a small emergency medical clinic. These folks are isolated from town. But these small establishments would not be entirely dependent on these because of something going on way on up the road here called paving the Middle Fork Road. And what used to be the territory controlled by the big tire guys is being transferred very quickly to the Prius and Lexus crowd.
So you're...
So I'm saying you're going to have your transient population moving through here, as well as providing, you know, something, a short drive, you know.
So if you actually look on the map, we've got this green crosshatchings on there called the East North Bend Master Plan Overlay District. And within that, in our code, we actually did envision our planning commission early on envisioned exactly that thing. And so there is an allowance for doing a retail service area right at that corner there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's perfect. And it just confirms that that's a, you know, the previous planning commission's decision to do that.
You know, and the number of times that, that I've interacted with people out there at the little mini market that's not closed, you know, Rudy Barbecue that's now gone. People that have come down from the Middle Fork campground to buy supplies there. And they stopped me as a local and asked me all kinds of questions. But, yeah.
So, that's great. I mean, that's a great input.
That might happen on the Tanner intersection. Store type operation.
Right now, the zoning wouldn't allow it.
I know that. But
okay.
Well, Elizabeth, I don't think has had a chance. I don't know who all was here last meeting, but.
Yeah, we're still going
to. Okay, oh, yeah. Okay. Still reviews.
So, so getting back to Rob, we talked about Gary's. So Rob basically, he kind of put his dot on the entire map, and his comment was more just that he felt that maybe the Fulton conventional standards as they're now currently, at least in place, the interim ordinance, which will be, you guys considered and made a recommendation to the council, that it doesn't necessarily yield the 40 use per acre, so he thought maybe we shouldn't be calling it 40 use per acre if that's not what you. We don't know that, but that was his comment. So now, if you guys, we have two new commissioners that haven't given us kind of your thoughts on the current zoning map and what we could be looking at for change.
From Moon Valley,
yeah. For
on
yeah.
North,
I
think.
Yeah. So that's kind of the rural quality. But I also see that same issue coming in here at exit 27 at
there is exit 27.
That's 31, I think.
Yeah, 31, okay.
Just before 31 is when this kind of visual quarter for me starts. So when we talk about this idea of maintaining the rural quality or the rural character, the city is obviously, and I keep going back to the phrase, jump the shark on that audio. But we can, by zoning it, make sure that people entering the community still feel that they're coming to a place that's rural. And it's these entry points into the city that become important in what we're putting there. Now, truck town's kind of the downtown. That's the heavy trucks when you come off the road down there. But as you come through into the city, what are we seeing? And as you drive along I-90, what are we seeing off to the right? And that's the area where we have the potential for some additional development with the Board of View coming in from this direction, right, west. And then as you come east, the properties, they're both to the left and to the right. What you see when you enter, I disagree a little bit on the high density residential there, of course. While I would love to have whoever owns it hand that over to us for a beautiful park before we don't do anything, I don't think that's really necessarily realistic. And I don't know that we can downzone it without creating. I would be interested in the history of that lot and the discussions that have gone on before. Special zoning. I'd be more concerned about what can we do there that would maintain that visual corridor so that when you come over the hill and look, you see the hill and you see this community that kind of spreads out that doesn't look like the city. Yes, we have the McDonald's and all that. You still have kind of this long view where you don't have tall buildings. The thing that takes precedence is that mountain and trees, the tree line. And what we can do in terms of zoning to keep that. And that has to do with this 40U right now, low density residential that follows along I-90 out toward Trucktown. And also, as we're coming in from the opposite side, my little corner in the back, you're coming from farmland, from trees, from fields that you can occasionally see elk. They're in my backyard all the time. And then we come into this dead city. Now, the beauty is there's actually a great transition point where your square is. Because we come out of the area where we have the kind of preserved land that's nice and green and wild into this area where you see a transition point with sidewalks, with the metal bars blocking people from falling into the creek. So there's this natural transition point that happens to be right now. Where suddenly you see the kind of city starting. So it would make sense to me to have more density in there. But my thing is that as we're looking at this issue of density, do we need to do something to make sure that we don't end up with the lovely development that we now have across from the Prison Street Farm, sitting right on I-90 for everybody to see as they drive by? Because all of a sudden we're not. Flood proofing is very difficult in the current area.
two, they were going to be within even an affordable range. So there are other issues that I'm really concerned about, even though in practice I agree that keeping density in that area makes sense.
And I'll add on to your story in the same page. Some of my probably third or fourth down the line was split with anyone who wanted to redevelop in the areas now of the R is going to have to go up. You end up with a bunch of holdouts.
Not necessarily. We're not as high up.
Well, no, it'll feel that way.
In comparison, exactly. In comparison to what we have right now. But the thing that I, and the reason that I'm a little bit more tending to like this is I've seen numbers for land elevation in that back corner where we go out of the 8-0 zone. And I'm sorry, I'm jumping a little bit ahead on this, but it's part of my thought process. Into the AE zone, I'm seeing a lot of the existing structures.
These are flood zones, especially.
Yeah. So the AO zone is flood type AE. We have an actual elevation.
I have no idea what she's talking about either. So
I'll interpret any time we need to.
I'm
sure
they
can too. Exactly, you know as well. But there are areas that we know in the back, that back corner, kind of along the 8th, the land elevation is not that far off of the actual base soil elevation. Now, so in that back corner, and actually, if we go even further over, though, my dad will kill me for this one because it's in this area and he wants to keep nice big blocks. But if you move further into this area, a little bit further down, the numbers are even better for that kind of redevelopment if we're talking about trying to maintain higher density within walking distance of the downtown. So this is kind of an agreeing in certain respects that that is probably a good option for increasing our density without necessarily having to do high density residential elsewhere. The cottage residential, which I know was commented on, I like the idea of increasing the density there. I think one of our challenges is that in the long-range planning, we have a large portion of the city, the actual core, that's in the special hazard area. And what kind of impact, how much sense does it make for us to greatly increase density there instead of finding an area that's outside of the special hazard area that would be equally appropriate for higher density residential? And that's where the cottage, those part of that cottage area, I think, is special by that area, too. Am I remembering right?
There's a little bit of it. Actually, yeah, this piece is in the floodplain.
Okay.
A little bit of this one as well.
Right. So, but as we move further out, we don't, and there is an area as well, part of Old Side View, part of View, Side View, and what is it, Portside? Acres, which I think falls in there somewhere?
Not sure which one that is, but the floodplain line runs approximately like this, I think.
Yeah, so it kind of runs counter to what my whole idea was, which is protect that area that's visible. That happens to be the area that's not in the special flood hazard area.
The area that's here?
Right.
This is in the flood hazard area here. So that actually has dual interest.
Right.
Preserving that visual rural character from the freeway and then also addressing flood hazard issues.
It comes on the heels of having someone bring me a photo of the I-90 over time that happened in 59. Of the photos that he took as a college sophomore, I think. Came back and all his parents bailed out of their house and snowballed me, and then stuff asked the police to take photos with them. All broken up. So I've seen those. And it could happen again. So that area is one that I just don't see that it makes sense to develop that one as we're looking at it. And then perhaps even a down zone of some kind in that area to reduce the from the four.
Okay, so what I took from that is, just to summarize, to make sure I'm summarizing right, you have an interest in looking at our gateway, our entrances, and making sure our zoning really keeps that rural look and feel as an enter town. And then you like the idea of density in downtown, but you also see the challenges with that, as you know, with the flood hazard zones there. You're okay with potentially looking at raising the density in the cottage zoning area. zoning down here by I-90 where we know we have some flooding issues, and there is also the flood hazard zone there, the floodplain, which it sounds like it would be okay with less thick. So
I kept trying to get it over there with my own so that I could get it over. The zoning is not technologically savvy enough to make that happen besides this. So
we'll be going low tech until we end up getting the natural. So
great. The only comment I would make is that over here, not a drop town, I'm not opposed to having some sort of transitional zone between the industrial and the residential.
Uh-huh.
Whether it's neighborhood business of some kind, it makes sense to somehow buffer them from a health safety perspective and just quality of life perspective for the people that are out there to come up with some way to make it possible to use. And I guess that depends on what projects are works, and if it's kind of a done deal. I know that there's some things along there that just
are. Are you talking about 140?
Yeah, it's under
40. Yeah, okay.
It doesn't feel like that road will be either way. Sometimes as you drive and you see business starts and past businesses and shut down and others taking over, and
yeah.
It still seems like it's in limbo.
Yeah, so that area is an interesting one. That, you know, there's a couple different things to think about. It was food for thought as we come back to our next kind of meeting on this. What we've done in that area is we have implemented the, we do have single family there, we know that. So we have actually put in place with that overlay zone 30-foot buffers around. There's called a transitional landscape area along 140. And that, Mike, do you remember the dimension of that? That's 40 feet.
That's a 40-foot buffer, yeah.
And then as you go around those four homes that are in that dark gray area, these homes, yeah, there's a 30-foot on the back of those homes. So there's a protected buffer there. And then back out on to 140 with a 40-foot buffer.
Is that a visual buffer and a sound buffer? Or are you expecting the buffer to act as a sound.
Well, the purpose of the buffer is landscaping, but the landscaping helps to diminish noise as well.
I mean, the landscaping is visual, mostly sound, probably a little bit, but obviously, clearly, you know, it depends on. But we have performance scanners for noise of industrial, and so anything that went in there would have to meet those.
Like a noise wall.
No, we don't have anything that would require a noise wall, but they couldn't go beyond a perceived decimal level. Hopefully, though, you know, like you'll see a lot of the new industrial areas are more like what you see on Suquamish Ridge or what you see in Preston. And everything is hopefully what we won't see, or if we have things in our current list of approved allowed uses that we think are noisy that we don't want to see, that's where we can change that. And say, hey, we don't really want to see a concrete mixing plant or whatever it is, you know, that we think is noisy.
Let's face it, a logging mill, 24-hour logging operation, that's a noisy operation.
I don't think we'd allow that. We don't allow it.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You probably, given the fact that we're not cutting that much anymore, it may not be a good business of sight out here, but a logging operation is definitely noisy, and it'd be a 24-hour operation. You have to have some sort of criteria.
Right. We restrict a lot of those noise. We don't even allow dog kennels, for example, anywhere in the city. That's a restricted use. So so just kind of reflect on one thing to think about is, you know, sometimes, because right now the road acts as kind of a separation between residential, and then we've added the 40-foot buffer. So one thing to think about is if you downzone or if you rezone that to residential, you still want to maintain that separation. So now you have that residential up against 140, then you still have residential abutting industrial. And what we did now is we said, well, we've got a road that separates the two. Now let's throw a buffer in. And so in the end, you almost have that road's probably 50 to 60 feet wide. So you probably have 100 foot between. So that's kind of sometimes a nice benefit of
not. Jenna, would that industrial use become a an attractive nuisance by definition around residential properties. Would an industrial use become an
I think it's all about a matter of how that use is, how the property is maintained. If they have
I'm thinking about kids. Kids just love to scramble around construction yards and that kind of thing. Attractive nuisance draws people just because of the nature of what they do. We always, in the woods, we had to lock things up because we allowed recreational activities on the tree farm. They became an attractive nuisance that we could be impacted by, so we had to always do something to minimize impacts of people wandering into it. If you have a residential community right behind it, no matter how far apart, you have an industrial site, I wonder if that would be called an attractive nuisance.
Nowadays a lot of the, and it is called employment park. I mean, what we are trying to attract is more employment-generating uses, R&D type, something that is not necessarily industrial in nature. But that being said, any commercial use that usually goes in now has some type of security that, whether it's cameras or what have you. So usually that kind of takes care of a lot of the kids that might come over and want to play on that, whatever looks interesting. But you're right. I mean, any kids are kids. They're going
to... I won't forget my day as a kid starting up a ditch digger that was parked right in front of my street, putting in some sewage pipe. I had to see how things worked.
Sure, you used to go calling all the excavators and everything.
I have to say though, kids today do not do that. They are indoor kids. As I look at my grandchildren and the kids in our neighborhood and things like that, they are not allowed nor have the inclination to go out into undeveloped areas and just play. You actually have to teach them that nowadays. Or they are afraid to do it because of restrictions their parents have put on them, fear of strangers, fear of being accosted, things like that, that have nothing to do with, the natural area that we used to play in as kids, goodness sakes. Even the time from what I used to play in compared to what I would allow my children to play in, to what now my children allow their children to play in, is a huge difference.
I was never allowed to play in this. I just did it.
Well, I know. We weren't necessarily allowed to either, but we just did it.
I got my fanny spanked.
But, we could go a mile away from home and play anywhere.
Yeah.
But nowadays, children cannot do that for security reasons. Their parents simply won't allow them to. But so I don't think that's a big issue.
The reason I create this scenario is because I guess I'd be concerned about having going from a residential community right into the backyard of an industrial zone.
That's why I actually kind of think the street plays a nice additional buffer between the residents.
And that's, that's where all the kids play. That's where the wildlife.
No, I mean 140th. Hopefully, we don't have kids at 140th. I mean, I know they play in the neighborhood streets, but 140th is a little busier or a little faster.
Okay, I guess. Okay.
I mean, or,
I don't have kids. I cannot speak to that. I just think about my childhood and what I would definitely not worry about a street with. Especially with adult signs, I just dash.
I'm just suggesting. I mean, we have two options. We either put residential on the south side of 140th or we don't.
Yeah.
And so if you do, you still have residents that against EP1 or EP2 zone, industrial zone. If you don't, you have an additional buffer, which is.
What do our builders say, Gina? What do our builders say about building residences against an industrial climate in terms of their marketability?
Well, the prime example is John Day's Tanner Falls project. So he built Tannerwood next to an industrial zone property before he had any idea that that would eventually rezone to residential. So it wasn't even for sale at the time that he developed Tannerwood.
I never estimated John Day.
Yes. And that's hard to speculate. I mean, I think any builder, depending on their investment and their investment opportunities, will make decisions.
Yeah, but, I mean, you work with them. What do they tell you about when they look at your zoning plans, because I'm sure you take them in, you take them into account, do they look at this at the proximity of industrial to residential as a plus or a minus?
In today's market for what industrial looks like and the way that it's buffered and mitigated with design features, I wouldn't think that that would be a big issue. So Conga Ridge is another example. So you've got a lot of commercial development that's directly adjacent to residences.
Apartments.
Apartments or single family.
I know, but we have not gotten that comment from any developer. However, we really don't know. Wood River spans most of, you know, a big portion of that darker gray, and it's built. So we haven't necessarily... John didn't have a problem. He didn't express a problem for Tanner with Wood River. And other than that, we haven't dealt with another builder that they're built.
I build scenarios in my head. They aren't always true. I'm just trying to test the process here.
Yeah.
If it looks like we can do that, then as a forward-thinking guy, I would yield to that idea, but it just doesn't seem rational.
Yeah. I think right now what is important is let's get the issues on the table, because what we'll do when we list out the pros and cons, there's things we need to think about. For example, anytime we change the zoning from an employment park zone to a residential zone, we're now restricting our live-work opportunities. Do we want to be a community where we attract companies to come in where, you know, like another Nintendo or what have you? So those are all the pros and cons that we need to consider when once we've had all the, and part of what you just was one of our pros and cons. So
this area out here, and I know that in a couple meetings that's come up, and the landowners have expressed their concerns. A few people at the table that expressed their concerns. Can we just address a lot of the possible concerns with the ordinance that the city council just passed? But again, just with being concerned with higher density areas up there, if we choose to not based on that. I think the thing we figured out was Rob's suggestion that instead of the RDU, it's the lot size, and therefore, makes the system is completely the majority. And I know this is flood zone, like this area here, adjacent to this is Sioux Falls, but
yes.
Wanting to possibly look at the size of those lots. You never know. I guess that, like, I'm still very new. This is very unfamiliar to me. So I'm in a learning process, and at what point do the changing in zoning get into property rights?
That's a very big question.
Exactly.
Any change that we do, it has an effect on that.
Right. And I remember in a public meeting, I believe it was a new area annexed somewhere out here, where the understanding in the annexation of that area into the city was that it was going to be 48 per acre, and everyone said that you better be prepared to reimburse me if you change that. Obviously, that might not be a problem, but it might get out of hand. So, I don't know, but this is an area that, in my opinion, we need to consider how that's going to be, how we want that developed or not.
So one thing that we will be doing, once we get kind of a strong idea of what your overall recommendation as a planning commission will be, is any area or parcels that you are considering rezoning, we will actually send a notice to those people and say, hey, please come to this meeting. We are considering rezoning of your parcel. And those people will come with So keep that in mind, you know, yes. That is part of the equation.
So then the two other things that, the next one is, I think I should take up with the Parks Commission, but I do a lot of running in the valley, and I feel, you know, we're talking about making things easily accessible and have a community feel, and I feel like there is tremendous potential and yet some major gaps in, like, recreational access. You know, we've got this Holly Valley Trail that runs right down the middle of the great beginner. We also have a beautiful levee trail that doesn't really begin and doesn't really end.
I love that trail.
Right. You know, and so I feel like with some bike lanes on roads, with... Well, and with some designated greenway possibly tied into what was being talked about earlier with the wildlife corridor, you know, integrating those things to make the downtown more accessible to some areas without using your car, and possibly connecting it to some of the other neighborhood centers that, you know, that we're kind of throwing around there. But I mean, like I said, I run all over here very often, and oftentimes I'm left with really unscenic, like, bypasses that really seem like, with a little bit of intention, it can be a beautiful system. You know, and then we look not only to draw on the upcoming Middle Fork recreational opportunities, but also, you know, outside Battlesnake, bringing those people into town and actually generating some, you know, revenue for the town that isn't just based on them coming, hitting the ground, filling up on gas, maybe some new feed out on walls, and shooting out of town. So, I mean, yeah, that kind of applies to everywhere.
Yeah, Jen, I can almost see it. Coming off the railroad trail and spinning right up Tanner Road and through Sagale and Woodridge and getting up behind Trucktown into the Middle Fork Road system as a way to kind of connect that rail grade, which goes south over towards the Rattlesnake, but or up around the pass, but sneaking a foot bike trail through those new neighborhoods through the Tanner Road system.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because my suggestion isn't more bike lanes on the roads. It would be a foot and pedal trail. I've had the fortune to grow up in a town that had one of the first in the country, and I just remember the summer, it's beautiful. And it's rural, and I mean, it's closer to wild than it is anything else, because you're not next to a road, you're not on a road. And yet, it connects to all of those. Yeah.
So, Curtis, the way that would happen, and we'll have an opportunity for this later in the comp plan update, is our parks element of our comp plan has a specific trail plan map that designates areas of future trail connections. And so we have designated those in some areas, and then I've also proposed acquiring easements to fill in missing links. But you guys will have an opportunity when that park plan is open to consider what are some other areas that we might want to designate for future trails as well.
Okay. And then one other idea, just give me feedback, because it's something that I have. As I tried to familiarize myself with, like, the different neighborhoods, I noticed one of the themes was having, what was it called? Not community centers, but basically like neighborhood centers. And it's some dream community neighborhoods. You can't beat that. But some of them are yet to be determined. And I'm wanting to kind of push with the follow through of that intention. You know, I'm sure in some areas it would be harder than others. But you know, some areas are very developed. And I'm wondering, the idea that I like are. A community farming area where maybe, you know, maybe near the higher that land designated and preserved with the possibility that people can congregate and commune.
Are we going to be doing that in Tollgate, having a, like a pea patch or a farming operation for the public out there?
Yeah, that's actually in the Tollgate Farm Master Plan, that eventually when we redeveloped the Tollgate Farmhouse, that the farmhouse can serve as a little pea patch garden area and, you know, small-scale events venue.
I was thinking large scale, you know, people who wanted to plant half an acre, call it, you know, and farm it and feed the farmer's market and that kind of thing. With
that's a possibility. Right now we have it just kind of undesignated as agriculture with cattle in the middle, but if the cow operation goes away at some point in the future. So
oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, the city could basically do it. Farm or more of
an
organic, grow your own food program.
Circle
didn't have
a lot
of love out here in the
trash.
Yeah.
They all have. Yeah. Do you know the history of potato farming on the medical and how that unceremoniously cracked?
You have to be.
Well, we see that just at Mount Sinai Nursery.
Well,
it's trying to grow pumpkins.
After it was set up as Meadowbrook Farm, they leased some of the property for potato farming. Well, there's a certain large undulate population that developed a real fondness for potatoes, and at the same time developed the ability to dig them up.
They don't like apples, though.
Oh, they love apples.
They don't eat my apples.
Well, we use apples in the trap when we have.
Do you?
Yes.
I have a rogue apple tree right on Tanner Road.
Apples. It was a rogue brewery.
It's a rogue apple tree. I didn't plant it. It's hanging out years ago. I always have apples in the ground, and all they eat are the squirrels. You'd think I have a few elk walking by, they'd leave them alone.
Oh, I've seen elk eating those apples.
Do they eat your apples, too?
Well, I've seen you eating
your apples. Yeah, I'm surprised you're not yet.
They eat apples in my neighbor's yard, too. I don't have apples in my yard.
I've seen them on my way home on the Sequoia Valley Trail, where they're actually standing there, and there's an old apple tree, and they're just...
Yeah. Well, that's just it. My presumption is we do have elk that walk along our fence. I would think they would just pick those apples and just crush them, you know, but they don't seem to touch them. The smaller animals pick away at them. I'd rather they would eat them, because I'm not cutting them up.
A question on Tollgate. Are the apple trees being left in place?
Yes, that's actually a part of the plan. There's some kind of volunteer apples that are growing along North Bend Way. And what the intention is to use the rootstocks for those and then to graft on, this is Dave Batty's plan, I don't know if you know Dave Batty, to actually graft on heritage apple varieties that grew in the valley here historically so that it can become an heirloom orchard over time. Curtis, did we get through all the...
Those are my suggestions and thoughts on this.
I'm kind of just to kind of gauge what's our best avenue for getting all of us together. So at some point, what we need to do now is kind of say, okay, we've talked about these issues, now let's kind of really list the pros and cons, and then make some hard determinations of what we want to do based on those, you know, part of the pros and cons are actually what is the current zone at the, you know, people that are going to be affected. So my thought would be, we basically heard from everyone. We come back to the next meeting. It would be great if we could get everybody there and really make that meeting, and if you can't, I understand, but make that meeting kind of a really hard working session to come out with and potentially some direction on, because what we'd like to do is be able to kind of start, like if, for example, if you want to rezone something, we want to actually kind of go back to our GIS guy and maybe have him potentially make a map to show what that could look like, and then we come back.
The end goal of this is that what we have to do is determine our residential capacity for our purpose of our comp plan update. But before we can get there, we have to know what the zoning is in order to understand the densities that lead into that capacity. So we need to nail that down with you guys as soon as possible, really.
You know, this is an annoying question every time I come to these meetings because I feel like this is kind of playing house, but as commissioners, I think we need to have some real hard discussions about issues of land value, property tax return. What is our planning process doing to the long-range viability of this town? We can do all this. I don't feel like we're making decisions wisely. We're kind of making wishful indicators, but I think we also have to have some pushback from people who are saying, well, no, you can't do that because we're dependent upon this, and the value here is this, and we need to be thinking about this to sort of bring our ideas more into alignment with the reality of what's on the ground. And so, don't we as a commission have the right to invite people in who are not planners, but are entrepreneurs and developers and people who understand the economics of putting on the ground what we're talking about, and attorneys to help us understand some of the pushback from the law as what we're talking about. Don't we have some responsibilities of inviting cooperators like the Greenway, people like those who might have an interest in some of our views about corridor protection? They might have some financial resources that could help us make those decisions. It just seems like we're not getting enough information to actually make a whole plan.
Well, I think we can invite anybody we like, but before we invite them, what we need to do is put the issues on the table to understand what those are. For example, you know, if your intent is to rezone all of Silver Creek into commercial zone, we have some economic impacts to share with you, and that's the pro and con list. If we wanted to bring in somebody who could speak more to that part of it, we can do that. We might have to throw up the flagpole because the funding, you know, the available funds that we have to use consultants and stuff is, you know, potentially a part of the equation what we need to figure out. But if we want to start talking to the Greenway about our gateway zoning, great, they would love to come and talk about that. But before we had even the issue on the table, we wouldn't have known that would be a person we'd want to invite to talk with us. So my thought is, it would be great to bring in some other input and what have you, but first let's make sure we know what you guys are thinking of, so we actually know where there could be potential impacts. So that pro and con list, I think, is important. Like one thing that I think, I'll just share with you from an economic standpoint, I think North Bend has a lot of sprawling commercial. Okay, if every area of North Bend got built out in a commercial way, there would be commercial kind of stretched all the way down North Bend.
That'd be 99.
Yeah, and when you look at your market of only 25,000 people in the Upper Snoqualmie Valley, we don't have actually the population to handle a lot of the commercial. So there are, we have a lot of input, which we haven't given yet, because we don't want to squash your guys' thought process, but adding more commercial has its impacts because of our market capability to we have a lot of underperforming commercial areas right now. So, you know, one of my thoughts that I've always felt as a city planner here is, how can we really concentrate the economics to some core sectors, like downtown should be a vibrant, busy part of town. Well, to do that, we got to make sure we don't have commercial sprawling all the way down to truck town. We got to really make a place. And I think that goes back to your comment on the neighborhoods and creating that neighborhood kind of follow-throughs. We do have the opportunity to have little nodes of commercial.
And it gets back to your comment, too, on the neighborhood centers.
Yeah.
So what are we doing to emphasize the design elements of a particular area to make it successful and make it desirable for people to gather in and want to come to? So we'll come back to that when we get into the language of our land use element, where it does describe certain neighborhood centers and implementation measures.
So I'm feeling that once we get into the conversation deeply, so far all we've done is put the issues on the table. I think we'll really have some pretty good conversation about the economics of, the impacts from our decisions or our wishes or our dreams based on that. You'll find that if we want to start implementing little neighborhood stores within certain areas of town, that's going to be a real challenge to make it a viable thing without an impact to residential neighborhoods that are there. Not that it can't be done, but it's just one of those things we'll really, I think, be able to dial into some interesting conversation. I think the gateway discussion would be fantastic to involve the Greenway in. So I don't know. I'm happy to go in any direction you guys want to go in, but before that, my thought was, let's really understand, so you guys feel confident in, yeah, I think I want to see a different zone there, or it's just by having that pro and con list, I think it will extract a lot of information.
Okay. I asked this question for myself, and I think you answered it. I'm glad to know we have more overlays coming. We're going to be talking about the financials and that kind of thing. So that's ahead of us. Great.
And feel free to ask those questions, because sometimes, being a planner is also, the economics of a city is all part of how you plan a city, too. So placement, you got to think of the economics and what have you. So ask us the question, because otherwise maybe sometimes we assume that, I don't know. So feel free to bring the question. So if we need to go to our finance people or bring in an economist, we'll do that.
And a lot of these things we have to balance against state laws, too. So Growth Management Act has certain provisions about what your densities can be and other things, jobs, housing balance, that we'll need to consider with any of these ideas as well.
This was one of my questions, because I look at this when you're going to issue the special request for area. Is there anything with everything from the waters coming down to the planning side, talking about having high density residential, for example, in the special request for area? At least what they're saying with the 1,000-foot view seems to suggest they would be discouraging that because they don't want development at all.
Not necessarily. The Growth Management Act allows cities to zone flood hazard areas low. I mean, it enables you to zone that, but we're not seeing anything coming down saying you really shouldn't be zoning.
They're not definitely on the CRS audit for doing that.
No.
But that brings up another point that we have to consider, though, which is competing objectives. So if we're just purely focused on our CRS points and about minimizing flood hazards, we could downzone our downtown because it's in the floodplain.
Well, it ended up killing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other objective is we want that vibrant downtown that's got walkability and interesting mix of residences.
I was just curious if you. I'm reading way too much about it, and I just don't really see stuff in the city planner. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I think we're basically on the same vein in the realm of it. We're not getting pressure to rezone cities or
So from my understanding, then staff will come up with some pros and cons to each of these that we bring back to the Planning Commission for their discussion.
Well, I thought we were going to do that together in our next meeting as a group. We can get some starting points going. That's why I kind of think it helps just have a discussion together. I mean, I'd love to have a discussion with Jim about, increasing the downtown commercial area.
Well, and I suppose my misunderstanding on what was going on there was a desire to increase the density in that area, residential. I didn't catch that it was the downtown commercial.
So, and then that's the other thing. All of you guys are going to have different opinions. So what would be nice is if we say, okay, let's talk about this one. List the pros and cons, and then collectively you guys can decide through kind of a motion that you're either going to continue it or majority just doesn't find it to be valuable and to be viable, probably a better word. And then we'll kind of say, okay, let's move to the next one. And then ultimately we'll start dialing in on the details, and then we can bring in the experts if we need more than.
And then, Jenna, we also have some other issues that maybe you're not what the planning commissioners have raised, but have been brought to us previously with dockets and things like that that we'll want to probably add to that.
Those will be our nuts. Okay. Yeah, I think that would be a good way to go. So, are you guys good for going out at that route?
Mm-hmm.
Next meeting?
Yes.
We are. Yeah.
Okay. So, feel free if you have questions that you can give us. Feel free to shoot me an email about more of the economics and stuff, because then we can get some information prior to. I think we'll end up having those questions once we dial a little closer in on what we're looking at.
Give me your biking schedule so I can contact you when you're in.
My what?
Your biking schedule.
My biking.
So I can contact you when you're available.
Yeah, that might be dangerous. I'm losing light now.
Yeah. You know what shocked the hell out of me the other day? And it's only because I haven't driven there in so many years, you can tell. But I was going up to the Carnation Farm. I came up against the stoplight in Carnation on Entwistle.
Oh, yeah.
What a shock that was.
Carnation is,
And it was stoplight.
Yeah.
At Entwistle. That just freaked me out. Have you seen it? Of course, I've been avoiding that area for years. For some reason, I had the reason to go up there, and there was this stoplight in the dark. I didn't even know it was there. And that tells me, how many stoplights are we going to have on North Bend Way in the next 5 years?
That's an interesting...
Because we have a lot of busy
interstates. That depends on how many traffic circles going.
Yeah.
Sure.
It just seems like we're getting to some sort of a level where... Yeah,
there is a threshold.
The public safety is has to be considered.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if there's a light that's warranted, it's either going to be a light or a roundabout. I mean, we have to signalize intersections that need it. And even what we do, Bendigo is unfortunately not functioning at that level of service that we're happy with. So we got to get some connections and. Additional.
It just seems like, there's a real bottleneck at the QFC. Just trying to get out on that road.
Yeah.
If the exit was all towards that side street, we signaled that street, we gave everybody a chance to get through. But it's just, it's a game of chicken getting out of that parking lot.
Public Works is working on a proposal to address that with an additional roundabout and then a median, actually, in between the two roundabouts to keep people from doing that.
Yeah.
Jenna, you get a chuckle out of this. I was coming out of the post office on bicycle, and about the time that I got up and stomped on that right pedal to accelerate out because I was going into town, chain flipped off his block.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You know, it was all I could do to. just to hustle and get out of the way of driving. Because that.
So did I miss it? When is the next meeting?
Next meeting is going to be 2 weeks. We meet every 2 weeks, so 23rd.
Okay.
And those come fast for us. If we're not having a meeting, we're getting ready for it for you guys. So it's always like, Mike will come in and say, oh, we got to get packets out again. They come fast. Okay, well, thanks, guys.
Then you also only have for every other week because off week's the city council.
What's that?
Off week's from
no, right,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
The city council.
Yep.
So is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn our meeting.
Motion seconded, meeting adjourned.